This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Greetings and welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us for a special pre-recorded program. I'm your host, Ihez Wuhib, in Washington. Coming up,
we should do all we can to cut it from the bud, expecting that the worst could happen, because we have seen how the virus really speeds up and accelerates in other continents or countries. So that's our advice. And I think Africa should wake up. My continent should wake up.
That was Dr. Tedros Adhanom, Director General of the World Health Organization, warning about the spread of the coronavirus in Africa. Details coming up. And the West African nation of Guinea is defying the coronavirus pandemic to hold a controversial referendum on Sunday. We'll have these stories and more ahead on today's special VOA Africa program. Our top story, the African continent so far has the world's lowest burden of coronavirus cases, with just hundreds compared with a global total of 200,000. But health officials say the pandemic has special considerations on this continent, which already struggles with overburdened public health systems. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Coronavirus is creeping across the African continent, infecting hundreds of people in at least 30 countries, including Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Senegal, and South Africa, which holds the biggest burden of cases in sub-Saharan Africa. And although the Africa region has the lowest number of cases in the world, head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, did not mince words when it came to how his home continent would fare if the virus is allowed to go unchecked.
We should do all we can to cut it from the bud, expecting that the worst could happen, because we have seen how the virus really speeds up and accelerates in other continents or countries. So that's our advice. And I think Africa should wake up. My continent should wake up.
South Africa has about 150 confirmed coronavirus cases. The rising numbers prompted President Cyril Ramaphosa to announce tough measures to try to slow the spread of the virus, including a travel ban from high-risk countries, school closures, and a ban on gatherings of more than 100 people. The WHO's Africa Regional Director, Dr. Matsidiso Moeti, says in some ways, the continent has some advantages.
The in-depth experience that we've had with some very severe widespread outbreaks in the African region is an advantage. It's an asset. For example, some of the work that we are doing has been based very much on the platforms that have been established in response to the Ebola outbreak and the preparedness that was in place for the Ebola outbreak that's just winding to a finish, we hope, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So the community platforms, the learnings from that experience, and the mechanisms that are in place are going to help us.
Health officials say they're unsure how the virus will affect untold millions of people with existing conditions. South Africa has the world's highest burden of HIV. Professor Cheryl Cohen of South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases.
And I think there is not really any specific information yet available on how this disease affects HIV-infected individuals. But if we think about what we know from other respiratory viruses, such as influenza, and how they present in HIV-infected people, we do know that HIV-infected people, particularly those not on treatment, are at risk of more severe illness. And we also know that people who do take their treatment and whose immune system is reconstituted, in those people, that increased risk is substantially reduced. So people on treatment with HIV may have a slightly higher risk of severe disease than others, but it certainly won't be these very high levels we see in people not on treatment.
One grim reality that experts say Africa should prepare itself for. This is going to be a tough ride. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Aid groups are warning about the impact of the coronavirus outbreak in refugee communities. The United Nations estimates there are more than 30 million refugees worldwide, many living in conditions that are ideal for the transmission of the virus. As even rich nations struggle to cope with the pandemic, health experts say it's vital for the international community to be prepared for any outbreak among the world's most vulnerable groups. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Around the world, health authorities are telling people to stay home, to keep away from other people, to make hygiene a priority. What chance is there of that in a refugee camp? Professor Richard Sullivan is co-director of the Conflict and Health Research Group at King's College London.
Many of these refugees are often packed very tightly into camps, and that makes a big difference to transmission. The access, of course, to water, sanitation and hygiene makes a big difference, and also just their general nutritional state. They're in a huge state of stress anyway, which suppresses their immune systems.
Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh is home to 900,000 refugees who have fled violence in Myanmar. Knowledge of the COVID-19 virus is varied. This man told VOA, "I forgot the name of the virus. I heard that disease has occurred in different countries. People are dying, so we should clean our hands." That good advice is mixed with rumour and misinformation. This woman says, "I heard that if you are attacked by the new disease, the hands and feet are disabled, saliva falls from the mouth, the injured person barks like a dog." Beyond official refugee camps, many refugees and migrants are constantly on the move. Again, Richard Sullivan.
Many refugees and particularly internally displaced populations live in makeshift camps very far away from any sort of external official help. And those are the ones that are really very, very vulnerable.
That includes the hundreds of thousands escaping conflict in Syria's Idlib province and those stuck in makeshift camps on the Turkish-Greek border as they try to reach Europe. Kakuma in Kenya is home to almost 200,000 refugees, among them Burundian nationals and former nurse Renovat Maniragesa, who spoke to VOA on the phone. Maniragesa said nothing has been yet done in terms of sensitization. The health officials I spoke to told me they are waiting for guidance and directions from the Kenyan Health Ministry. Even rich nations are struggling to cope with COVID-19. Doctors warn any outbreak among refugee communities could have catastrophic consequences. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Zimbabwe's government has declared the coronavirus outbreak a national disaster and banned public gatherings of more than 100 people for the next 60 days. Parliament also has stopped public hearings for bills that have yet to be debated. Across the country, the national art galleries have shut down. Reporter Kutsai Zanawashi has more details.
The 60-day public gathering ban affects church gatherings and weddings. Kimberly Kute is a wedding planner. She says this ban means she will get little work done.
It just means that I'm not making any money for the next 60 days. So it's 60 days that I have no income whatsoever. I already had events for April and May that have been postponed to a date to be later announced. I don't know when that is.
Netai Marola is the National Youth Vice Organizing Secretary for the youth wing of the main opposition party, MDC. She has gone to remand prison to visit fellow party members who are incarcerated. She is alarmed at the risk to inmates.
The situation that I witnessed at the prison is so disheartening. The place is just so crowded, and there is no any precautionary measures by the government to minimize the risk of coronavirus. People who are visiting the remand prison are not going through the basic sanitary measures of avoiding bringing the virus to the locked-up inmates.
She adds that visitors aren't forced to wash or sanitize their hands at the entrance like in most public places. While the president banned public gatherings, he came under bed light after addressing a rally of thousands of people Wednesday. Many are questioning if there is political will to guard against the coronavirus. Rashid Mukundu is a political analyst.
The challenge with the actions by the president is that they are not well thought out and nor based on any commitment to follow them through.
He adds the state of the health sector is more worrying. Already a week before doctors carried out a stay-home action over erosion of wages from an economic crisis, hospitals suffer from shortages of equipment and medicines. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunamashi from Harare.
The fight against the coronavirus has now turned to taxis in South Africa as the government warns about 60% of the population could be infected by the time the virus is halted. Taxis transport over 16 million commuters daily, and there are fears they could inadvertently spread COVID-19. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa is taking no chances in the fight against the spread of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. The focus now is on public transportation, especially taxis. Working with the taxi associations, the government has launched a campaign to regularly disinfect the taxis and sanitize the hands of every commuter. Under this program, every taxi will be disinfected before and after each trip. All commuters will have their hands sprayed with sanitizer liquid as they enter the taxis. Department of Transport spokesperson Ayanda Alipain says there's just no time to waste.
Some of the things that will be put in place are the screening devices at your hotspots. I mean, Bree Taxi Rank, one of those that commutes a large number of people to and from work. So national government, provincial government, and the taxi associations are holding hands and will be sharing resources.
With the number of infected people in the country now past 200, South African National Taxi Council President Philip Taibosh says time to act is now.
As a taxi industry, we have a responsibility towards South Africa. We have a responsibility towards the people who are giving us money on a daily basis. Most importantly, the driver who's driving with 15, 22 people on the vehicle, that particular driver is exposed to a lot of infections.
Many commuters have welcomed the government's move. Karabo Dube commutes in a taxi every day.
Yesterday, I came to Johannesburg. I got the shocking news that one of the staff was actually infected with the virus. So it was actually scary. Right now, everywhere you go, you need to have gloves and you have to have a sanitizer, especially in the public transports.
But some commuters, like Metembe Kumalo, says the program does not give them 100% peace of mind.
I'd say, yes, I'd applaud them. It is a good idea. Though I do not fully trust that it would be able to stop corona completely, considering the number of people that enter into a taxi and come out, we're not certain about it.
The government says a similar program will be started for buses and trains. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
VOA is experiencing some technical difficulties. We are offering this program recorded earlier. We aim to return to our normal programming within a few days. And in the meantime, thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo has closed its gates to tourists to prevent the COVID-19 coronavirus from reaching its population of critically endangered mountain gorillas. Gorillas, along with chimpanzees and other great apes, are close relatives of humans and are at high risk of human respiratory diseases. To find out more about the potential threats of COVID-19 to great apes and what Africa's oldest national park is doing to keep these rare creatures safe, VOA's Jason Patinkin in Washington spoke to Virunga National Park Director Emmanuel Di Merode in Goma, Democratic Republic of Congo.
We felt it necessary to suspend tourism for two reasons. One is that the risks associated with international travel represent a threat to the local population in eastern Congo. We have a responsibility towards them to minimize that risk. Second reason reason, of course, is mountain gorillas as a critically endangered species, susceptible to the same diseases and the same viruses as humans are. And so that represents an overwhelming risk for the safety of the mountain gorillas as well. And so for those reasons, we felt we didn't have any choice but to suspend tourism.
Particularly when it comes to the local population, you know, how many tourists are normally coming in and what countries are they normally coming from?
The kinds of visitors that we get are really from all over the world. So from the US, from Europe, from China, from the Middle East. And many of those countries, of course, are heavily affected by the terrible virus. There haven't been any recognized cases yet in Eastern Congo. Of course, we would not want to be the reason for it being introduced in this region.
Can you talk a bit about the issue facing the gorillas and potentially other primates as well, other non-human primates as well in the park? Is there any evidence that they are susceptible to COVID-19, or is this more out of a precaution for them?
So, of course, you know, our knowledge is limited, and scientific knowledge in general is limited on this relatively new disease. But what we do know is that mountain gorillas have had known cases in the scientific literature of suffering from respiratory diseases that have been transmitted by human beings and by tourists in particular. There have been known fatalities of mountain gorillas in other countries. You know, that's enough for us to acknowledge that we have to be extremely cautious.
Eastern Congo is not new to very deadly disease outbreaks, of course. An Ebola outbreak is hopefully almost finished there in Eastern Congo. Are there lessons learned from that your teams are using to keep themselves, to keep the animals, and of course, most importantly, to keep the local people safe?
Yeah, that's an extremely important question. We, Virunga in particular, has been living with Ebola for 2 years now. For us, it's meant that we have an extraordinary experienced, well-experienced and competent team dealing with public safety and the safety of the species, the animals that are entrusted to us. Virunga was able to play a very critical role in containing the Ebola epidemic because the eastern flank of the Ebola-affected area has been the national park. And so park staff played a key role in managing the points of control that prevented the spread of the disease. And of course, the big difference with Ebola is that Ebola is a local disease, whereas this is a disease that's coming into Congo from the outside, and tourism would be a vector for that disease to enter Congo, and that's a responsibility we can't take, whatever the financial consequences.
If this shutdown has to go on for a long time, could there potentially be impacts on the gorillas due to lack of funds for the park?
It'll have a catastrophic effect on the park's finances. We lose about 40% of our revenue overnight, which will mean that, you know, there'll be some very, very difficult months ahead, both for the park and for the communities that are dependent on this, you know, this incredibly important industry that is tourism. But unfortunately, that's the situation we're faced with.
That was VOA's Jason Patinkin in Washington speaking with Virunga National Park Director Emmanuel Di Merode in Goma, Democratic Republic of Congo. Cameroon's military says it has killed 24 separatists who vowed to disrupt Sunday's election rerun in the country's English-speaking regions. The Anglophone rebels say the casualties were on the military side, but witnesses say a number of those killed were civilians who are getting caught up in the fighting. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon military commander Brigadier General Valen Kaa says his troops this week raided and destroyed 10 rebel camps as part of efforts to secure Sunday's partial election rerun. He says 350 troops deployed to the English-speaking western regions also seized rebel vehicles and weapons and killed a number of their fighters, including a commander.
The so-called general was neutralized, and you had around 20 killed or neutralized, many were wounded on the run. We are really satisfied. Let's continue so that peace comes back to the West, Northwest, and Southwest regions.
The separatists on social media acknowledged the military destroyed their camps, but said most of the casualties were among the military. General Nkah, however, said all of his troops came back alive and with just a few minor injuries. Witnesses say the military also killed civilians during the raids. 44-year-old nurse Mitombin Shari says troops shot dead at least 6 civilians, including his daughter. He spoke from the English-speaking village of Bangolan.
Do you want to tell me that my daughter, my 70-year-old daughter, who was going to a farm, was carrying a weapon? Meanwhile, she was carrying just her hoe to go and walk. Or do you want to tell me that my daughter, who is 17 years, is a terrorist fighter? That's not possible.
Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji rejected the possibility the military killed any civilians. He says President Paul Biya ordered the raids to stop a spike in rebel attacks on candidates and voters ahead of Sunday's elections for the National Assembly.
The head of state gave instructions that the administrative authorities and the forces of law and order reinforce the mechanisms for the rerun. We can tell you that the security situation in the Northwest region is under control.
But locals and even ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement Party officials say fighting is common. An official of the ruling CPDM party in the village of Mbiame, Ben Collins Nyiberiwo, says rebels are always attacking in the area.
Either they cut off your fingers or they cut off your hand completely. Those who are not able to pay ransom have been killed. 10 houses belonging to my colleagues have been burned. Even this morning, we received calls that they are coming to burn our houses if we take part in the rerun this Sunday. They have fabricated explosives. They cause a lot of havoc.
Nyiberiwo says they are pleading with the rebels to call off their attacks and with Cameroon's military to offer protection. The rebels, who are seeking an independent English-speaking state within French-speaking majority Cameroon, have vowed to stop the elections. Cameroon's Constitutional Council ordered a redo of the vote in parts of the western regions over widespread irregularities and fraud. The court said President Biya's CPDM party, which was declared the winner, was guilty of violations ranging from ballot stuffing to chasing opposition voters from polling stations. The party and government denied any wrongdoing. Voter turnout was barely 5% in some English-speaking areas. Authorities have vowed to secure the area for a better turnout this Sunday. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
After long delays, the West African nation of Guinea is defying the coronavirus pandemic to hold a controversial referendum on Sunday that could allow President Alpha Condé to stay longer in power. AP reports nearly 5 million voters are registered for the vote, which will also choose 14 National Assembly members. There is a major pushback by the country's opposition to this controversial referendum, according to AFP. However, the government argues the proposed changes to the constitution will, among other things, codify gender equality, and the holding a referendum is democratic. But critics fear the real motives is to reset presidential term limits, allowing the 82-year-old president to run for a third term. Condé is a former opposition figure who became Guinea's first democratically elected leader in 2010 and was re-elected in 2015. He is barred from running for a third term under the old constitution, but with passage of the new amendments, he can. According to AFP, they would keep a two-term limit and increase terms from 5 years to 7. But Condé has implied that his previous terms served will not count. And that wraps up this special VOA Africa program. I'm Yeyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in to this recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.